Welcome back to Stitch Files and 2023.
Yeah, first one of the year.
Yep. And we have special guest with us today.
We do. Well, he is kind of special, isn't he?
You say that about everyone.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to mention his name. I'll let you introduce him.
Yeah. You've known him for a long time.
But should we tell people where we've been?
If you want to.
We've been on break.
For the break, holidays. Travel.
Travel, yeah.
Holidays, yeah.
Travel.
And we had to build this, if you're watching on YouTube, this beautiful studio now.
We painted that. It's hand painted by Brandon and myself. I think we did a pretty good job on it. We spelled Bearden wrong, but I don't think anybody will notice it. Do you?
Yeah, I know. You know, was it Hutch came by? Mm-hmm. My nephew came by. I don't think you were here. You weren't here.
Probably not.
And he thought it was Brandon America.
And you probably told him that's what it was.
Yeah. I was like, one day, son, it will be.
Right. Well, we're here in the worldwide headquarters of Bearden America. Well, actually, Bearden worldwide headquarters.
It's the global network.
It is the global network. And we're the center of the universe here. Mm-hmm.
So we put this backdrop together. This is going to Atlantic City. It will not be at Long Beach.
Yeah, it didn't make
it
the trip.
It was a nightmare.
How many new cuss words did we?
Well, you created quite a few.
I pinched my thumb and I said some really bad words. I'm sorry, Mom. And I think I may have. I think I blasphemed.
You cursed Charlie Pride. I cursed Charlie Pride. A milk cow.
Yeah,
those were the two targets.
Charlie Pride and a milk cow. And I love milk and I love Charlie Pride.
Rest in peace, Charlie Pride.
I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have said that about Charlie Pride. He was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And why he came up in my little Rolodex of things to think about in my brain.
Oh, and what was hilarious?
Oh, this is
funny. I won't say what you said, but so-and-so Charlie Pride.
Yeah.
And your watch went off, and Siri said something, finding songs by Charlie Pride.
She says, let me get information, whatever she says. And I look at my watch. It's a picture of Charlie Pride. So somewhere, wherever Charlie Pride is, I'm sure he's in heaven.
He's in heaven.
But he heard me.
Mm-hmm.
And they told Siri.
He reached out from the heavens.
From the heavens and... Yeah, I didn't sleep well last night. I had dreams,
visions of Charlie Pride dancing.
I had a dream. I was a country music star.
Sounds like a nightmare. Anyway, we have Sean Evans with CIT on the line.
Shamus.
Yeah, we don't want to waste any more of his time with our stories.
He's a busy man. He talks on the telephone a lot.
Yeah. What's going on, Sean?
Hey guys.
Hey. I was
thanks for.
I meant to look up the episode that you were on. He was on the GPX show.
2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago. And it was a short episode because we were like running up to showtime. So.
Plus, we had a little technical difficulty.
I forgot to press record. Yeah, which happens. So I'm glad you're back on the show.
Yeah, he is.
Thank you for having me back.
He's no stranger to Stitch Files.
Yeah, that's right.
Or to me, or to Brandon.
Yeah, and you may be delighted to know this, maybe not. You are only the second repeat guest.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Who was the first?
John Kuhn from Southern Exposure.
John Kuhn.
Yep.
I was just talking to John the other day.
Did you?
Yeah, see how he was doing. He was in Tennessee about to walk into a big install and was hunkering down for the week.
Yeah, I talked to him yesterday. You know, he calls me probably weekly to check in. He's such a good dude.
John Kuhn?
Mm-hmm.
Is he installing machines this week?
Mm-hmm. He's in Tennessee.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
He's a good man.
He's a good man.
I don't care what people say about John. He's a good man.
Yeah. So,
speaking of good man.
Yeah. We'll get back to our guest.
Sean.
Who's also a good man. I mentioned before we started rolling, just give the folks listening kind of a brief history of Sean Evans.
Well, not from when your mom and dad started dating or anything like that. Don't go back that far.
No. Okay. Adulthood?
No, yeah. I want birth.
Oh. Okay, we'll find a compromise.
Okay.
Oh.
Now, how did you? I mean, I've been in the story, but how did you? How did you get into the decorated apparel industry?
I kind of fell into this industry through a family connection. My dad and my stepmom had an apparel company out of California, and I realized after a couple summers working there that I didn't want to work in the back anymore, but I liked this whole decoration thing. That was really my introduction to the industry, and oddly enough, the show that's happening later this month in January in Long Beach was the first trade show I ever went to, and it was the Impressions, now is the Impression Show. And it's kind of the beginning of it. So I've been and done a little bit of everything in the industry, from production to selling for Baridin, sold machines for about eight years now. And then I moved over to the finance side, working with you guys since, but I've never gotten too far away from this industry. It is somewhat intoxicating. It keeps you coming back for all the, for a lot of good reasons.
What, I'm trying to remember what year you started at McPherson.
I started in California in 96.
Okay. All right. I started end of 93.
Okay. I remember, was the shop or the office in Greensboro on Wendover?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that? Mm-hmm. Okay, so I remember going to Wendover.
You probably came to Wendover for training.
I did, yeah. I was there for a week and a half. And during that time, Denny O'Neill and John Arlino came in at various times. We overlapped.
I can't remember you being there, because I remember Denny and John. I first met them. I worked upstairs. Did you ever go upstairs in that building?
I remember upstairs.
They only let key people go up there.
How'd you go?
Well, wasn't that where Annette's office was?
I'm sorry?
Wasn't that where Annette Joyce's office was?
Her office was right next door to mine.
Okay.
Actually, so Vicki Daher Long shared an office.
Okay.
Very end of the building.
I remember going and spending some time in Annette's office.
Okay. We could have been gone to a trade show or something when you were there. Because, man, back then we were doing about 20 a year.
Shows all the time back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was when I started with Baridin. I was there until 03.
Well, that was McPherson Meister Graham.
Correct. Yeah, so I went through all three kind of. It was McPherson Meister Graham, Wilcox Gibbs, then Baridin.
Yeah. Or it could have been that I met you and you didn't leave an impression on me, and I just forgot about you. That could have been what happened.
Well, that's true. I used to have brown hair. It's now gray. So that could be it.
So when you started, was the office in Costa Mesa?
The office was in Costa Mesa. Yeah. I was working for Roy Lacey.
Yep.
As kind of like the junior sales rep, gopher, keeper of all technicians, make sure they did their thing. But yeah, we were right in Costa Mesa, the office that had been there, I believe, for maybe a decade before I started. They'd been there a long time.
But then we moved it. Then we went back. We moved it to, where did it move to?
A little bit further south over towards Santa Ana, but it was maybe a mile and a half. But it changed. You remember the big mall that was there?
Yeah.
There's a big shopping center. It was on the other side of that shopping center is where they moved it to.
It was pretty close to John Wayne, wasn't it? The airport?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. John Wayne was on the other side of,
right.
I remember. Airport, of the shopping center. And we were north side of it when I was there.
Yeah.
And then it moved up north towards, I guess after they moved up, like inland towards Anaheim.
I'm trying to think of the name of the last town they were in there, and I cannot remember.
The Alondra?
No, it'll come to me in a minute. I remember. That bugs me when I can't. We weren't there that long.
No.
Before Wilcox and Gibbs did their little thing. But I remember the, I think it was Office in Costa Mesa. They had that really nice taco place down the street.
Yep.
Remember that? Yep. Well, what a nice place. There's a hole in the wall. You walked up and if you didn't speak Spanish, you just pointed at what you wanted.
That's the best kind of taco joint.
They were, like, yeah, really they were like 50 cents each or something like that.
Yep.
Oh, that place was so good.
Yeah, no, that is one of my favorite parts about California is you get that sort of food. You don't get that in other areas of the country easily.
No, it was some good stuff.
Speaking of California, are you going to the Long Beach show, Sean?
I will be, yeah, I'll be heading out there next Thursday morning. I get in early and I'll be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Join you guys. You're flying out when, Bob? Tuesday?
No, I'm leaving on Monday.
On Monday?
Monday afternoon. And I think I get out there around 2 o'clock. Meeting Earl and Thomasina. And then we have early move in, so we're going to go down Tuesday morning down to Long Beach, start setting up. Okay. So.
And then who's coming in? Is it just the U.S. contingency, Thad and Kevin and Earl?
From Cleveland, Thad, Kevin, Earl, Frank Barbieri, and then the usual Kent, Gary. Tom Thomasina from Northern California, and Habib from the Toronto office is coming in.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen Habib in a couple of years.
I saw him last
week.
I was in Toronto last week up at the Mississauga office.
And was there a show up there?
Yeah.
How was the show?
It was pretty good. Yeah, it was really good. It was just a 2-day show. It was Friday and Saturday, and I was up there. Well, I went up there Wednesday. Went into the office, to do some work, and then Kevin came up, and we went to the show Friday, and then half a day Saturday, and I came home. But yeah, they wrote a few orders. It was very well attended. I was pleasantly surprised.
That's their biggest show of the year, is it not?
Well, yes, it would be, yeah. And it seemed to me like it was bigger this year than what it was last year. I go every year. We did a show in Montreal last year. Can't remember what month it was. And I think they're going back. It was Toronto. Well, it used to be Toronto and just Calgary. And then... we always do those two shows, and then last year they added Montreal, and Calgary was going on the same time as the Fort Worth show, so I didn't get to go to Calgary, but I did go to the Montreal show, and it was pretty good. They hadn't had a show in Eastern Canada, or that, you know, in Quebec, geez, probably 10 years, they hadn't had a show there, and we did pretty well there.
Well, I know that they, with a limited number of shows... you would hope that they are well attended. So hopefully that's a good sign for what the rest of the year's events will be like.
Yeah. Excuse me. They're starting to get back into shows up there a little bit. I mean, we were doing that little, Sports for Source in Niagara, Niagara Falls, Ontario. And that's kind of like, it's kind of like that little NES show that we're going to do in Connecticut here.
Okay.
At the end of, at 1st of February. So it's by invitation only, and you have to be part of. And it's basically a hockey show, where you know we bring our CO1 bigger field machine that'll sew the hockey bags and things like that. So, and we do well there. It's because most of these, well, not most of them, all of these people are sporting goods people, so embroidery fits right in with them. And there's only us and one other vendor there with embroidery machines. So we tend to do pretty well there too.
Well, very good. Well, I know that I think, you know, we're going to have a pretty full contingent at the show this year. I think from what I've been finding from speaking with vendors the last couple weeks is that it's a full show again. similar to what it was in 2018, 2019.
Yeah, I mean, they have exhibitors over in that big round mezzanine place over there.
Mm-hmm, the arena.
Over there, and they plus in that room that, you know, you remember one year, I think Rock Screen Printing was there, out there in the middle of it. And then this year they got the big room open over there too with some smaller booths. So, yeah, I talked to, we talked to Patrick.
Yeah, Patrick from Impressions.
Patrick Lewis from Impressions. Yeah. And it was, that show was sold out, I think, back in September. It was completely sold out.
Correct. I spoke with a couple of vendors this week that started working with quite a bit last year, and they tried to expand their booths from what they originally had gotten, and they weren't able to do it in their current spot on the main floor. So they've got split booths where one is over by Rock, who's in that, you know, in between area between the arena and the main convention floor. Mm-hmm. And then their main booth is not far from, I think they're on the 20 or the 2000 aisle.
Yeah.
So they're real close, you know, from that standpoint. But the, it sounds like everybody's super excited about the show and getting back to things. And last year, as you know, this was the show kind of had a little bit of anxiety before the event because, of, you know, people were still living through the nightmare. And, you know, it was still a good show, but it was not what I think this is going to be truly a return back to what it should be.
Well, I think COVID scared a lot of people off too. And that, and you know, California still had some restrictions, which I think kept some people from coming. And I was a little aggravated because depending on what door you went in, the restrictions were different. I made that known. I was pretty ticked. You go in one door and it's like a different set of rules than a different door. And no way, nobody was on the same page. I don't care. Make your rules, but make them the same for everyone. I'll get off my soapbox now.
Yeah.
I don't want to start talking about Charlie Pride again.
Well, I guess, you know, back to the thing, you know, where have I been? Obviously, it was with Bearden for quite a few years. I've been on the finance side at a couple different companies. I joined CIT, which is a, you know, commercial bank. We merged. Big news for us in the last year, we merged with First Citizens in January of last year, which is, I know, is a brand and name that you guys know.
There, Raleigh, North Carolina.
North Carolina. That's right. Raleigh, North Carolina. So, it's been a great transition. You know, they understand the industry, they understand the customer, which was very appealing to me coming to the company. They, if you remember back from the McPherson Meistergram days and ELC, the leasing company, they sold a lot of paper to CIT back in the day. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely a understanding of what the industry is all about, which I think is very important for lenders and partners and vendors and so forth, is everybody understanding kind of what the industry has to offer.
What I was going to ask you, what's the benefit of joining up with First Citizens? Like what changes does that bring?
What the changes on our side, really, you know, from a process standpoint, it hasn't changed anything on our end. We have certainly more brand awareness in certain markets, which has been helpful outside of the decorated apparel space. The biggest change, and this is something that's going to be forthcoming in the next 3 to 6 months, is we're going to be able to offer vendors and customers more traditional banking solutions. So if they're looking for business lines of credit, business credit cards, those are going to be things that if they have accounts with us, then we're going to be able to help them out on that side of it as well, which CIT as a commercial bank was focused on specific elements of the banking arena and didn't do anything when it came down to if someone wanted to open up a business banking account for their new company that they started and they bought, you know, a Baradin single head machine. That was really where we couldn't help them, which sometimes was a bit of a rub. Now with the merger with First Citizens, First Citizens has all that. We have to be trained on it to, you know, to offer it and so forth, but it's something where that's going to give customers the ability to have kind of a suite of services as their business grows, leveraging that they've been making payments on, you know, a loan on a piece of equipment that, that they bought for their business.
So, how was your year last year? How was CIT's year in your division? Not, you know, not the entire company.
Our division was, we had a great year. We hit our budget number in October, that we had hoped to hit. And we hit our stretch budget number by November. So we ended the year, the best year that our division's ever had. And it's, you know, in its entire history. And a lot of that had to do with, you know, some of the things that we struggled with at the same time, our speed of underwriting and speed of, you know, getting a customer approved and docked on a piece of equipment. That created a bit of backlog in the, on the funding side, because they were inundated. I think that as rates continue to rise, we saw some headwinds with it, but at the same time, there was a sense of urgency to getting their financing in order. One thing we didn't do is we didn't tighten our box as far as credit was concerned, and we kept our approval windows open for 90 days. And some vendors got, you know, 120 days on approvals, which certainly helped with the long lead times that most every vendor has experienced,
yeah,
to some degree. But as far as, you know, my year, I was happy with where I ended. Always want to do more, but, you know, I understand there's certain elements of my vendor relationships that I couldn't get any more business out of because they didn't have the machines to ship. Mm-hmm. And that it seems to be getting better, but I think that's everybody's struggles. You could probably sell more of their product if they had the ability to get more of it in their hands.
Yeah.
Well, it's what could have been. You know, you wonder how many could you have sold if you would have had them, or would have been able to manufacture them. That's what I'll always, I mean, I McPherson was a lot bigger company than Baird in America, just because we sold a lot of other stuff, you know, textile equipment, everything else. But this is probably the best year we've had since I've been working for Baradin.
Okay.
Which was the first year that we started direct, which was 2000. Mm-hmm. So, because, you know, when they took us, so when Baradin took over McPherson, you know, the market had taken a pretty big hit. I mean, everybody was downsizing then, just because there was a big change in the market with, you know, everything going overseas and going to smaller machines. Mm-hmm. But, man, we sold a lot of 12 and 15s this year. It's amazing. We hadn't sold that many in years, probably since the McPherson days. So I don't know. Yeah, you know, I hope it lasts. I don't trust this economy. Who knows what's going to happen? But it seems to be rolling along pretty well right now. It has to slow down, and everybody knows that. But have you guys tightened up on your lending at all?
We've tightened up on, you know, as of the first of the year, we've tightened up on some of our, we've tightened up on the deals that probably shouldn't be doing anyway. You know, tougher credits. We definitely have seen a, you know, weakness in some of the lesser quality deals. But as far as what we go after, CIT, you know, let me step back a second. CIT is not a, we're not a lease company. We're a commercial bank. So we do equipment loans and not leases, we do have a risk tolerance that's not quite the traditional bank, because we only go into markets that we understand the assets and we understand the markets. And when we go into those markets, we know it and we buy deep. That said, there is still deals that we just don't want to take on that risk. It's too great of a risk versus, you know, the reward on the contract.
Sure.
So we have tightened up on the poorer quality transactions across the board, which kind of makes sense. The one thing that we haven't done is we haven't changed the term options that are available. We can still go out to 72 months and 84 months on, you know, larger deals over 100,000. And we still are supporting the industries that we've supported before. There hasn't been any industries that we've cut back on. There's some industries that we didn't reopen after COVID because there was restrictions that we had in place during COVID that the company made a decision not to go back into. None of them are in this, you know, decorated apparel arena at all. But as far as where we see it going forward, we're seeing a trend in other industries outside of specialty graphics that manufacturing is coming back. My biggest growth area for this last year has been in production equipment to make other things, which is, I love seeing that because that takes me back to, you know, my family's business of, you know, making a product and selling it in the U.S. and it was all, you know, U.S. based. I think from what we're hearing on our end, as far as the economists that work for First Citizens, it's going to take a while for people to realize that, okay, we'll just have it made overseas, deal with the shipping time, and sell it here because it's bringing into this market. We can increase our margins because of it. The realization that there's a lot of things that can go wrong between production location and where it's going to be sold that are out of your control, that have cost variables that can increase exponentially. You guys have certainly seen that on shipping containers, you know, let alone the cost of commodities as far as the materials that go into it, mm-hmm. Which is, I think, long-term is a great thing for our country, is building some of this stuff in the U.S. versus being so heavily reliant on finished products coming in from overseas.
It's I don't know if, I guess COVID may have taught us some lessons that we've all been preaching about, or at least I have, you know, the Made in America, and there's some things that just can't be made here, and I get that, but I think that, you know, just down the road here, give an example, Toyota's building a gigantic battery plant about mm-hmm. 15 miles down the road from us, and all they're going to make is automobile batteries for, I mean, for battery powered cars, uh-huh. Which is good for our economy here where we live, but I don't know where they're going to get the workers.
That seems to be the biggest struggle.
I mean, I would imagine these jobs would pay pretty well. It would be skilled labor. And mm-hmm. I cannot remember how many workers they said they were going to hire, but it's going to be quite a few. And I don't know if there'll be union jobs or not. I doubt it, because North Carolina is a right to work state. But that's a pretty big deal to our area. And down the road from there, there's a Korean manufacturer. I've never heard of them. They're building, I don't know if they're building an automobile plant for this car or if they're building batteries too. So
I think it's a plant. I think it's for cars.
I think cars too. It's a Korean.
I can't remember the name of it.
Car. I've never heard of it. They're new to the U.S. and they're supposed to be building them there. And all that's in our county, in Randolph County. And we are very rural. Wow. I mean, this is all cows and, I was going to say Charlie Pride, but
milk cows,
animals. But I had a point to all this. My point was to back up your point that maybe stuff is coming back to the States. Manufacturing and you know, bringing some good jobs is what I hope. But I will tell you, people are going to have to get used to paying more if it's going to be manufactured here, which I don't have any problem with it if it provides jobs, to Americans. That's fine. And if it's quality, I have no problem with that.
I think that, and I've had this conversation over the years. I think people are willing to pay for quality.
I think so,
See that there's truly quality there. If it's, verbalized as quality, but it hasn't really changed the product and so forth, I don't think people are really, it's kind of the old adage, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on you, or something to that effect. I think there is something to be said that if you want something that's going to last, whatever it happens to be, it's not going to be the cheapest thing on the market or in that category. And I think the idea of, yes, our major big box retailers have done what they've done. And, for some commodity items, it is a price game. But when you get into things that are very specific to a, whether it be a manufacturing piece of equipment or a vehicle or, a computer or what have you, there's definitely a difference in the quality when you just go up 10%. And people are willing to pay that difference if they know that they can rely on it.
Well, I mean, they our machines aren't cheap. They don't have any problem paying for our machines. But
yeah, they that's know a reputation testimonial there.
Because you can certainly buy a birding machine that's a lot cheaper. Mm-hmm. But, buyer beware.
Correct. And that's the thing I've always preached is, you look at, regardless of what the machine has on the front of it, as far as a branding or the color of the machine, or if it's got a control panel that's touchscreen or whatever, it's what your machine does and does it work on a daily basis. That's what you're buying. I find it humorous that people are, I think by nature, maybe this is just me. There's certain products that I buy for what they look like, and there's a lot of products I buy for what they do.
Right.
And if it does what I need it to do and it does it consistently, I don't have to replace it after 6 months. I replace it in 10 years. And that's okay. And there's a cost difference.
I don't know about other machines or printers or anything like that in the decorated apparel industry, but there seems to me past probably 2 years, things are tending to get gimmicky. A lot of automatic, so-called automatic features that you pay more for, and on paper they sound really nice and they seem like it would be a really good idea until you put them in use and then they're not very practical.
Expensive to fix.
Yeah, I'm going to say automatic presser foot height adjustment, automatic tensioning and all this stuff. It all sounds great on paper. But at the end of the day, it's fine when it works. But when it doesn't work, it can be a nightmare.
Correct.
What I like about Bearden, and I've said this a million times, and we try to keep it as simple as we can. Just a simple machine that works and does what it's supposed to do, and you can get parts for it and have somebody work on it. That's kind of our recipe or our motto. And I'm not knocking these other companies that tend to go that way, but it just seems to me like some of this stuff's getting overcomplicated. And I don't know if that's true in the printer side of things or the screen printing side of things or not, but that's kind of what I see.
Yeah, I definitely think that there's some of that in the printer space. You hit the nail on the head a second ago. You want the machine to do what it's supposed to do, and some of these things may sound great on paper, but in reality, they're not, because there's an element to, you know, them being, it be, that product being fragile or more fragile because of this new feature. Some of the equipment that I see that's come out in the last couple of years, I still scratch my head, knowing the screen printing and embroidery process from growing up and being around this industry for 30 years. There's certain elements of this that the ink that you're dealing with, the fabric that you're printing on, the what you're trying to sew through, it's not going to go wide open 100%. You've got to slow down. And there's an understanding of what the limitations are with that process in order to get the success of the completed product. Some of the digital presses that are out now on the screen print side, I think they're really cool, but it's, you know, we've been looking at direct to garment since when? 2004, 2003?
Yeah, something like
that. And it was going to revolutionize and eliminate the need for an automatic press.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How'd that work out? We're 20 years later, and I haven't seen it replace an automatic press since. You know, do they do some things that are unique and maybe more flexible than the traditional press can accomplish? I think so, but there's certainly a cost difference of production. You know, kind of the way I liken it with on the embroidery side with Baroding, you can have 15 single heads or 115 head. What does your production dictate the need for? Well, if you're going to be doing a bunch of 5-piece runs or 6-piece runs, you don't need a 15 head. You know, put together 4 gangs of 3 machines in pods and crank out those products in small runs. You're going to be more efficient. It's going to cost you more, but you have infinite flexibility.
You know, about 10 years ago, maybe longer than that, I was at one of our big accounts on the West Coast, and I won't mention any names, but they were, and Sean, you've seen these, and Brandon, I know you've seen them. It's these, I call it a patch, but it looks like simulated embroidery.
Yeah.
And from a distance, it looks like embroidery. Have you seen these, uh-huh. Sean?
Yes. It's like a heat seal on to the garment.
Yeah. And I remember, I'm pretty good friends with the VP for this company, and he said, "I want to show you something that's going to revolutionize everything." And he said, "I hate to say it, but it's going to put you guys out of business." And I'm like, "All right, well, that's exactly why I walked in here. I want to hear that." So he shows me this thing, and I'm looking at it. And from a distance, it does look like embroidery. And they had started putting it on their shirts and on some of their caps. And then about a year or two later, and it never, of course, it never replaced embroidery, but I asked the embroidery manager, I said, "Well, what happened to this project?" He said, "We did it, and we kind of put it out there, and we pushed it, and people are like, nah, we don't want this. We want embroidery because embroidery looks like embroidery." And they still offer it. It's still on their website, but they don't sell very much of it. But, you know, and there's nothing wrong with different ways to decorate garments. You know, I like everything. I like screen printing. I like direct to garment. I like embroidery. I like heat press. I like all that stuff. But one thing is not going to be the be all end all to everything. And, you know, it has to be a variety of, you know, different types of decoration. But, I mean, will embroidery ever be completely replaced? I don't know. Who knows? You know,
I would agree with you.
If you remember when we had the Meistergram, we got out of the Meistergram business because personalization went away for a while. Remember? It went away.
Uh-huh.
And then it came back. Everybody wanted to do names. They wanted to do names and monograms. So all this stuff runs in cycles. But I think the core stuff, screen printing, embroidery, I think it's going to be around for a long time.
I would agree with that. The one thing that I'm seeing too, and this is something from speaking with some of the next generation vendors that are in the print space, or even in, you know, still print, but more on the special, you know, the rest of the specialty graphic space, which includes the digital side and so forth. The idea of screen printing, embroidery, direct to garment, laser, vinyl, direct to garment, direct to transfer. All of this is a medium to get the image onto a myriad of products. The folks that are setting the world on fire, in my opinion, are the ones that are taking the technology and saying, okay, what does my customer want? Or understanding their customer to understand what they're interested in seeing as far as a look, and then matching that to the decoration method, which takes a shop owner into having to be diverse enough in what they have as far as capabilities to be able to support, you know, this image that the customer's looking for. I can't do that with embroidery. I need to do it with direct to garment.
Right.
Or I need to do it direct to transfer. But having that level of understanding what the customer really is looking for, as opposed to saying, well, we only do embroidery or we only do screen printing. Those shops, you know, when I first started with Berrigan, you had only screen print shops or only embroidery shops. It was very rare that you had shops doing both. And I think going forward, it's going to be very hard for someone, unless you're a major manufacturer where you're producing your own product, that you're turning around and selling yourself. I don't think you can be that specialized. I think you have to have that flexibility or understanding of where you want to go based on what your customers' needs are.
Yeah, that's a good point. So let's change gears here just a little bit. What kind of predictions, do you have any prediction for 2023? You guys, I'm sure you've talked to all your finance people there or your people there at CIT. What are they thinking? What's their crystal ball?
We're thinking that, yeah, well, we don't have a crystal ball, but if we did, I know that we've looked at it. The prediction is that Q1 is going to start off slower than it has in years past, and probably the second half of the year is going to be busier than the first half of the year. Certainly is not going to be potentially as busy as last year was or the year before. And I think, you know, 2021 and certainly the first part of 2022 was pent up demand, with customers, you know, buying equipment or, you know, realizing they've got to replace this piece of equipment that they should have replaced in 2020, but they didn't because the world changed. So we're predicting things to start slower. I think that's going to be, I'll be interested to see what the show's like from that regard. I think the long lead times are going to continue to be a reason why people are getting in line, and how the vendors handle that pipeline of business is going to probably continue to evolve, which is probably a good thing. You know, I think getting too much thrown at it at once is probably not ideal. And honestly, the rates of where interest rates that have gone up are still, the people are holding off because you look at it where we were 12 months ago on a lot of things from an interest rate perspective. It's gone up basically double in the span of a year. And it wasn't because something that we controlled. It was obviously greater things. But you look at the major industries, the housing industry, the construction industry, manufacturing in general, the costs of doing business have risen over the last 18 months. There's a digestion time that we're thinking is going to take place. But I think that's, to answer your question, first quarter's going to be slow to start. First half of the year is going to be probably a little slower than what we're expecting. And the second half of the year probably is going to return back to a normal a more normalcy. And hopefully that gives people an opportunity, manufacturers an opportunity to get equipment back in stock. Or
now what's your idea of normal? I'd like to know what normal is.
I don't
know. For 3 years.
I don't have a compass for that.
Yeah, I think normal would be, you know, if you're back to lead times that are, you know, for this industry, maybe under 10, 12 weeks. I don't think we're ever going to be a situation, and you could probably answer this from a manufacturer standpoint, where you're stocking inventory in depth. You know, for various reasons, but
well, I agree. This may be a predecessor to what normal is going to turn into. And I can see from our standpoint, you know, we got burned really badly in 2008. We had so much inventory that we just, we couldn't give it away. It was really, really tough. And I know Baird in Japan made some, that scared them. And it should have, you know, you got to keep in mind, we're still a very small company.
Yeah.
I do know that our company's in much, much better financial shape than what we were then. We had a lot of debt back then, which is gone now, and they've done a good job in Japan getting things under control. And most of the debt they had was bad debt in other countries. It wasn't us. You know, we still managed to sell a few machines to keep the lights on. But I know that they don't want to get in a situation where they got a bunch of machines in stock. And I know customers don't want to hear that. I know we'll have machines in stock when all this is over, but it's going to be the popular models. I can see us, you know, maybe going back to where you have to order 12s and 15s. You know, the models that aren't very popular, you know, you may have to order a, you know, maybe a two head or wait a little longer on a two head or a four head, just because we sell so many ones and sixes, and eights. You, Brandon, you sell a ton of eights. So I can see where inventory is going to be more controlled. It's not going to be like, oh yeah, I want a two and I'll, you know, we can ship it to you. Or you want a two head and we can ship it to you tomorrow. I would like to see us, you know, you got to keep single heads in stock. You just have to, you got to keep them. Because somebody out there is going to buy a single. Same thing with sixes. Those are our best selling models. Now, this is just my speculation. I mean, Japan hasn't said anything, but I kind of know how they do business over there. So, and I can't say that I blame them. So, but, you know, what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, we were rarely out of a machine. You know, maybe you'd have to wait a month, and that was fine. But, you know, this waiting 6 months, 5 months, it drives you crazy. And, I'm just thankful the customers have waited to get their machine. But, and you know, I think that, we're going to have another, hike in interest rates, at least one more. And I think you mentioned something just now. I don't think we realize the full effects of the interest rates now. I think it's going to catch up to us in about another month, maybe another 60 yeah. days. And that's going to slow things down. And I don't blame the Fed for raising rates. I really don't. I know it hurts all of us. It hurts business, but they kind of had to do that to cool the economy down a little bit. So, but you know, we'll get through it. We'll return to some sense of normalcy at some point, but I think it's going to hurt for a little while.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's, you know, you and I have been through, we've been through a couple of these cycles as far as, you know, the industries up and down, and, you know, struggles with price increases and so forth. And the one thing that I'm seeing as I'm learning more about other industries beyond the specialty graphic space, that the one thing that I can genuinely say is good for, you know, this market is there's a running to quality, known quality in every industry that I've gotten involved with. And it's for the same reasons why people, you know, hold on to Baird machines or why they have a strong secondary value in the market from a used perspective. And the thing you hit on a minute ago, talking about you're going to keep ones and sixes in stock. This is one thing that I not really, you know, you hear about this in the greater world about, you know, big data and having all this information that's now available to you. And what do you do with all this information as far as, you know, in the case of CIT, our conversions from application to approval to, you know, funding, all this information is out there, and the companies that are utilizing that to get better at what they do is important. Because the having it all in Bob Stone's head is great for Bob, but doesn't really help Brandon or any of the other guys as to, you know, what's the future going to hold. And I think the getting inventory and having inventory and the things that you're going to sell is not really a risky proposition for a manufacturer. Getting out into the speculative world, like you're mentioning with 12s and 15s, having those go back to more of a order on demand, that kind of makes sense because, you know, the number of 12s and 15 heads you sold this last year may be nothing more than a cycle. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, return, and you could be looking at a 5-year run of that sort of thing. Just like we may be seeing, you know, we've seen a lot of businesses buying a lot of equipment in the last 12 to 24 months. That may be a cycle, or it may be consistent. It's hard to know just yet until kind of things settle down a little bit and see how they consume it going forward. The one thing that, you know, you were asking earlier, what are we seeing? We're seeing across the board difficulties getting employees. That's the reason why people aren't buying equipment or expanding. Oh,
we hear that 10 times a day. Yep.
That is not just a unique thing. And I've heard it for years in the specialty graphics world, is I would buy another machine if I could get, you know, the employees to run the machine.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. I've thought about that a lot. How do you get more employees? I know this is probably a sore subject with a lot of business owners, but do you pay them more? Is it the pay? Is it what is it?
I guess two ways to answer this. One, I guess we just got to figure out that whole cloning thing, and then we can clone everybody, and then you can clone the good ones. Technology hasn't caught up with that. I don't know. I think every industry is a little bit different. Pay is part of it, but expectation for pay is the piece that's got to go along with it. Performance standards associated with a pay is the piece that I don't think every industry is caught up with. And by that, I mean, okay, you were expected to do, you know, show up and be here in your job, doing your task, whatever your task is, and you're going to make X dollars per hour. There was really no measure of how much you produced. Now there's ability to track that, and, you know, using that as kind of a leverage point to say, okay, well, you want to make, you know, 20% more than you're making now. Well, here's how we're going to do it. You got to get the buy-in from the employee. I think that's one area that I've seen work with certain areas of light production in other parts of the country. Just on the flip side of that, there's a couple vendors in the screen print side of things that are building machines that are fully automated, you know, and they take, for example, you've probably seen more of the reclaiming and screen washing equipment, in the screen print side.
Oh yeah.
That's not a fun job. And Brandon, you may have done some of this when mom and dad had the business at the house. Bob, you certainly reclaimed a couple screens. It's a glamorless job, but it has to be done. Otherwise, you can't produce shirts. So automating some of these processes is an area that you can eliminate an employee by putting a machine that does it for you without any of the inconsistencies, and it's a fixed cost. But as far as replacing, you know, where do you find the labor? I still think, you know, not everybody is ready to go to college. Not everybody wants to go work a job at a desk.
Well, there's people. Let me interject something here. That's why we need to bring back the trades in school.
Oh, 100%.
We've
100%.
I don't want this to get into a political discussion or anything like that. And it's, I don't mean it politically. I just think it's, you know, we've taught everybody to go to college and get a job, so you don't have to labor. I think physical labor can be very rewarding and very satisfying. And, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, you know, my dad had a gas station and I did a lot of physical labor. And at the time I didn't like it, but, you know, we're just getting away from learning how to, fixing things or doing stuff in this country. And I think it's catching up with us. And I want to make a point, and we're going to get off here in just a minute, but I want to make another point too, is, you know, I'm not suggesting that, I believe that a person's pay should be what their value is to the company. And I'm not saying that, oh, you should start somebody running a machine at $50 an hour. It's what's that person worth to your business? You know, what's going to make them happy to keep them there, you know, to pay them. I know up in Canada, I think they're starting operators out up there at $25 an hour Canadian, which is about, what, 18 here? About 18 here, I think.
Yeah, 70%.
But, you know, they used to pay operators right here in High Point, up here at Haynes Hosiery, or Millis Hosiery, they used to pay them a minimum wage to run an embroidery machine. So, and I think embroidery machine operators, it's very skilled. It is extremely skilled labor. You can't just put somebody in front of it that doesn't want to do it and doesn't have pride in their work and expect them to turn out a good product. So
agreed.
It's a conundrum. I don't have all the answers, but I do know that some of the most successful embroidery shops pay their employees really well, but they also demand that they do a good job too. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's kind of the way it's supposed to be, you know, make yourself valuable to the company you're working for. So,
well, you add value. I think, you know, the idea of, you know, adding value to your company, you know, I love part of the reason why I like this industry, you know, the decorated apparel industry, is the fact that you've got guys that are willing to do the work and they turn out creative things that have a really high perceived value for the masses. You know, the masses may be an audience that's, you know, focused on team sports, or it may be, you know, fashion apparel, or it may be, you know, apparel, you know, shirts specific to an event. But it's not easy, you know, and running production efficiently, you know, you look at every company that's out there. There's at some point in that company's existence, they've had to focus on how efficient are they in their process. And, you know, that, I think that that's the piece that we definitely have lost, in my opinion. We're gaining it back, kind of a focus on that with regards to American business. And it's good to see that we're coming back to that focus on what it is that we need to do to make ourselves more efficient, touch it less, move it through, improve the quality. And, you know, the price, I think, you know, that takes care of itself if you do the other stuff right.
Yeah.
You're right. You said it a second ago. You know, if you can increase the value, your value as an employee to an employer, sure, they should definitely be paying you because they can't replace you.
Right.
Yeah.
I know in the Boston area, I was talking to a couple larger decorators, and they asked, where do I find employees? And I asked the question, well, what do you start them out at? And they said, you know, they tie in this market, and they probably do it in others as well. You start out, you're getting X dollars. You know, to move up the ladder as far as pay, there's going to be a performance and quality component to it, because if they know that this employee can produce 200 pieces a day off that six head machine versus 150, the sales side of the operation says, okay, we've got an extra, you know, four dozen garments that we can get produced on a daily basis that decreases our turnaround time. We can promote that when we're talking to our customers, that we can get their work turned around faster. That allows us to hold our price at the margins that we want to keep. Well, that trickle down the other direction means that employee should get some of that benefit as well. Yeah. I think that connection is coming back to you know, working. And, you know, obviously you guys have sold a lot of machines to a lot of customers over the last couple of years that understand the value of producing a quality product, and they understand the value of buying a quality product. And I think that that's kind of the beginning of a lot of this, is you get what you pay for.
Well, I think another thing too is, it's not only money. I think here in the U.S., it's always been, you know, you work hard, you work every day, no excuses. But I think that's changing. I think that I'm seeing that some of the bigger companies, and I know the small mom and pops can't do this, but, you know, flexible schedules, you know, if you need to go to the doctor for something, and I'm like that with my people here, well, you know, Jamie here in the office, you know, Jamie or anybody, if she needs to go to the doctor, you know, I worked years ago for a big corporation that I hated. And if you want to go to the doctor, if you had a doctor appointment, you had to take a vacation day or a sick day. You know, if you have to let your employees go to the doctor, go to the dentist, go take care of personal stuff. You know, it's not, you know, you have to be here 8 hours a day or you're going to get docked. I just, you're good people. You give them a little bit of leeway and you give them a little bit of flexibility to do things in their life that they need to get done. And I think there's a couple companies out there, some of our bigger accounts that are doing that, and they're starting to keep their people there. So anyway, we could talk about this for hours. Brandon, you have any questions for Mr.?
I don't.
Seamus.
No,
I don't. Mr. Seamus.
So you're coming out to Long Beach on Thursday?
I'll be out there Thursday morning.
What's your booth number?
Our booth number is 19. Oh, hold on a second. Where do I have that? I think it's 1823, but maybe I hear this. Hold on.
You're not too far from us. We're 14.
18. Yeah, you guys are right on the main kind of aisle that runs the length of the hall.
In the middle, kind of the whole place. It's about
we're on.
I think we were the same last year, 14 or 15 last year.
Yeah, so you're right on the corner of the 1425, and then we're 1823. So we're, you know, four aisles down, or, you know, four rows down, I guess it would be, the other direction. But we're right on the main aisle there. It looks like the you guys are right behind M&R from what I could tell.
Mm-mm. We're right behind that big column where we are every year. You know the big V-shaped column?
Yep. Yeah, the one that's holds up the building.
Holds up the building.
Good place to be.
It's a safe place to be.
If it's an earthquake, it's the best place to be.
That's a wrap.
That's right. Yeah, it's not going to come down on you. So, yeah, I think we're...
What's that?
Go ahead.
What?
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask you a couple questions before you go.
Yeah.
I always ask our guests some questions that lets our listeners get to know them a little bit better. So let me ask you, would you rather be rich with an IQ of 25 or poor with an IQ of 150?
Rich with an IQ of 25 or poor with an IQ of 150? Well, I guess if I was... IQ of 25 wouldn't necessarily know if I was rich or not. So that would be kind of my first thought, you know, not that I have an IQ of 150. I don't know. I think as I get older, I realize that wealth, while it's nice because you can buy things and so forth, you know, it's not everything. So maybe, you know, maybe having the, you know, mental capacity and understand kind of what's important is more important than having things.
Yeah, I think you're wrong, because
need to be dumb and lots of money.
I'm only about 10 points higher than that, and I would rather be rich.
Oh.
So I figure if you've got an IQ of 150, why are you poor?
Well, yeah, I guess I think it's probably a choice.
All right, if you have an IQ of 150. Let me ask you another question.
Okay.
If you were given a slingshot, a book of matches, and a bottle of water and dropped off in the middle of the woods, how many days do you think you would last?
Don't ask me that.
I could probably last a week.
You think you could last
a week? You need water.
How long would you last, Brandon?
I could live there.
Brandon's a hunter. He's a woodsman. If you just gave him a bottle of water, he can make his own fire. He didn't need matches.
I don't even need water.
Yeah.
Well, you need water.
I'll just drink my piss like Bear Grylls does.
You just got to filter it and let it sit so it can separate. I would rather, you know, a week I think is reasonable.
Okay.
You know, it depends on where you're dropped.
That's fair enough.
If it's in northern New Hampshire in February, it's probably not going to be very long.
Yeah, that's another variable.
You have a lot of snow you can melt.
Like, the weather would be a variable for sure. Because if it's cold, I'm just going to lay down and die immediately because I can't.
Just tap out. What do you think your spirit animal is? What would your spirit animal be?
I would say it's probably like a lion or a cheetah. I like to move. Don't like to be in one place. I can, you know, get
lions,
me worked up.
Lions are lazy.
Yeah, they're pretty lazy. I was thinking more like a hamster or a rabbit for you.
I'd say cheetah. I think you're on point cheetah. With the cheetah. The lion, that's a bad choice.
Yeah.
Lion, you're right. A lion it lays around until it's motivated to go do something.
Yeah.
That's not me. I would also, I guess if you think about it more, I'm more nervous where I've always got to be doing something.
That's why I said rabbit.
Nervous
hamster.
Energy.
Yeah. Hamsters never stop moving. Matter of fact, if they stop moving, they're just like, they're dead.
Well, I think that's anxiety. I don't really think I have a lot of anxiety.
Yeah, I see you as a rabbit or a hamster. That's the animal I would sign to you.
I like Brandon's summation better than yours, Bob.
I like to lift people up, Sean. I don't know if you know that about me.
Yes, you're all about that. I appreciate that. Thank you.
When's the last time you ate Jell-O?
Ooh, that's been a while. It's funny, during Christmas, we were looking at recipes, and my wife grabbed the Jell-O cookbook, which I think it's kind of an oxymoron. Jell-O doesn't really mean it's a cookbook. That's more of like a dessert menu. I've always thought that book was a little strange. But it's been at least last time I had Jell-O. But now I'm going to probably go make some, because now I'm thinking, yeah, Jell-O with a little pineapple on it and grapes.
When's the last time you had Jell-O?
Okay, it's been years.
I had some just the other day. What made me think of this?
Really? I like
Remy,
it, but
Remy,
I'm not.
Remy was eating Jell-O.
Oh, okay.
And she said, you want a bite? I said, sure. That's my granddaughter.
Who was eating it?
She's 5 years
old.
Oh,
okay. So okay, well, that...
It was strawberry.
Their life is surrounded by Jell-O.
Yeah, I was going to say the only people that really eat Jell-O on the consistent are like really young people or really old people.
Yeah. I just wanted to get the taste of it because I figure my day's coming. I'll be in a nursing home pretty soon. I want to make sure I like it.
If you start seeking out Jell-O, you're like about two steps away from the retirement home.
She said, you want to buy the Jell-O, Papa? I said, well, may as well. I'm going to be eating it here pretty soon anyway. Might as well. And you know what? I remembered... I took a bite of Jell-O and it brought me back to my childhood, because when I grew up, we didn't have a whole lot of desserts, but my mom, she could make Jell-O, and she would like put fruit in it or coconut or something. And one last question.
Oh, yeah.
If you could choose any career or profession other than what you're in now, anything, if you had to do over again, or you could just rub a magic genie's lamp,
This is a magic genie's weenie.
She poofs out of it. And she's going to grant you a wish of anything you could be. What would you be?
It's my niece mentioned that because I've been thinking about that, you know, in conversations with my son and my daughter with regards to what they want to do when they grow up. I think, you know, you hit something earlier about making things with your hands. There's a sense of satisfaction to that. Maybe I'm just getting old and senile, which is possible, but and my kids probably can attest to that more than me, probably. I think, you know, doing things with my hands and making something out of nothing, I find a lot of enjoyment in that, and tinkering. So it would definitely be in the manufacturing, building something out of nothing sort of, you know, business. That's always kind of given me joy on some level, but I think I would definitely do that if I was to do a reset.
I thought you'd be a professional bicycle rider. That's what I thought. I thought like you would. Well,
that requires a certain talent. Well, that requires a certain talent, and you know, I have a phobia to needles, so that would be a hard. Yeah.
Well,
I wouldn't do well with that whole side of it. But yeah, I think active. You know, the thing I struggle with, you know, now is not being as active as I would want to be at times. But I think the building something out of nothing, doing something that moves people forward, you know, and that obviously that's a pretty broad statement. But I think that's where I would definitely fall.
Well, all right, buddy. We're going to let you go. I know you're busy. I hope your computer got fixed or whatever it was.
I don't know. I haven't checked it, but hopefully I have, you know, Microsoft 365 is returned.
Killing enough time so your computer would reset itself.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you can always reboot it, and that usually fixes a lot of the stuff, but I don't think that's the solution
I've been sitting here messing with mine pretty much this entire show. My MacBook is about to just bite the dust.
Mm.
So I feel you.
All right, buddy.
Well, Brandon,
I'll see you this next
in a
week.
Couple days.
Yeah, a few days.
That's right.
Yeah,
a few days.
It'll be this week.
I look for.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Well, when is this coming out?
Next Wednesday.
Wednesday.
It comes out when it comes out. Yeah, it'll be out next Wednesday. But when the people are listening to it, it'll be out. See how that works.
That always throws me. For the longest
time,
I thought we were live.
Yeah, we're not live. You're right. Your IQ is about 25.
That's 35 now. Give me a break.
Okay. Well, Sean,
we'll work on it. Thank you very much for having me again. I guess I'm in rare company only John Kuhn and I are the only two that have been invited back. I feel honored by that. So I appreciate
you. John Kuhn gives us, he usually pays to be on. I don't know if you were told that or not.
I was not aware of that.
I want to be on your podcast. I want to be on your podcast. We're like, we don't really want him on here. And then he said, what if I give you guys $50 a piece? And I said, dude, you're on.
I say, I'm going to have to hear about this because he listens to every show, and he'll call me next week and be like, "What's the deal with that?"
Yeah. So John pays to be on.
He doesn't.
It's not like we want him on here. I'm kidding. He's our friend. So. All right, buddy.
Well,
I'll see you next week. You travel safe.
Same to you.
Yep.
And Brandon, I will see you when I see you in Atlantic City, most likely.
Yeah, probably
we
so.
We may go out and have some Jell-O. One evening.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm game for, you know, California probably has decent Jell-O, I suspect.
Hey, be careful what you ask for.
Jell-O shots, that's what it'll be. All right, buddy. We'll let you go, man.
Thanks, Sean.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All right. See you, buddy.
Take care, bud.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, all right, Mr. Seamus.
It's funny. I was going to tell him this. I don't think I've ever mentioned to him. Do you know the guy that does the Hot Ones show on? It's the Chicken Wing Show that's on YouTube.
Oh, yes, I do know him.
He's Sean Evans, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so anytime, like, it's happened a couple times. I've been in the car with my kids, and Shauna called me, and they're like, "Oh, that's Shauna Evans from Hot Ones." Oh, and I never have told them different. I'm like, "Yeah, I know him."
The wings guy.
Yeah. Shauna Evans that we just spoke to is my favorite Shauna Evans. Second only to, or no. Yeah, I said that right.
Yeah.
That's Shauna Evans.
So the wing guy is second. Is my favorite, second favorite Shauna Evans. Mm-hmm. Well, he's the only Shauna Evans I know. But I will tell you this, though. If he could cook wings, I'd like him even better than I do now.
Yeah. He does some grilling and cooking. He might be.
Shauna does?
Mm-hmm.
He grills?
Pretty sure. I think we've talked about it before.
I don't see him as a griller. I see him as a takeout person.
He might be.
Uber Eats dude.
He probably takes his bicycle to pick it up.
You know what? He probably does.
Yeah. All right, housekeeping stuff. We got Lennox. No, shoot. Lennox City.
Well,
Long Beach.
It will be here at some point.
Yeah. Long Beach is this week.
Yep. Starts tomorrow. If this comes out Wednesday.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
It starts Friday.
Friday.
Yep. Yeah, that's the 20. I had it pulled up because I was going to forget it. 20th through the 22nd.
Yep. Friday through Sunday.
And we are booth 1425.
Mm-hmm. We will have a 6-head, a KT2 head, a Pro 3, and a CA2, the XL, the smaller machine. So stop by and see us.
Yep. I don't have the other dates. Atlantic City's coming up. There's
we got the
too,
NES. Well, yeah, NES actually, is February. Sean and I and Vincent are doing that little show up in Connecticut, but it's by invitation only. It's not a open show. So
yeah. So come by the booth, say howdy. We'll try to get back on schedule with the podcast. There's a whole bunch of stuff coming up, so it's probably going to be sporadic.
Yeah, right now we're in the middle of show season.
Trade shows, travel.
You and I got some travel to do.
Machines to deliver.
Yeah, so, but we're going to try to get back on schedule. I miss doing these, and we'll get some more. We got some topics that we want to cover, and a couple other people, a few more people that we want to interview too, so we'll get back on schedule.
And now we got to take this backdrop down.
We do have to take it down.
Yeah.
So you think the paint's dry?
Should be.
It should be dry.
Yeah. All right. Thanks as always. Happy New Year. It's 2023.
Yes.
Even though we're halfway through the month. But yeah, wishing you a prosperous New Year. And see you guys on the next show. Adios.
Sayonara.